This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, I'm back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Got to talk about this new Top Gun movie. It is getting out of control. Plus, don't worry, I'll give a slight spin just so we can justify talking about more movies on a sports show. I'll give a slight sports spin to the new Top Gun as well. In fact, I saw an article the other day that compared athletes to Top Gun characters. Maybe we'll have to do that just so I can justify talking about movies again on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. The show is podcasted in full. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And you can always get in touch with the show. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and leave a comment for the show there. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show, 843-608-1734. Or you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. Closed out last hour talking about the announcement of the kickoff times for the Gamecocks, at least in September. They opened the season with a night game against Georgia State, and then Arkansas and Georgia, the next two games, they jump right into conference play. Those are going to be two fascinating matchups, two good litmus tests very early on for Spencer Rattler, and both games will kick off, at least for the time being, at noon. Arkansas is on the road. The game against Georgia is at home, and I know a lot of Gamecock fans are unhappy about you get the defending national champs in your building. SEC game, and it's a noon kickoff. Now, maybe those fans are mostly upset just because of the tailgating aspect. How it's a noon kickoff, you're going to have to get there early. Maybe you don't have enough time or as much time to, you know, have fun out in the parking lots. Or it would just be more fun and tougher home field environment to come into for Georgia if the game truly was at night. Now, we did talk about this not too long ago, but Trent, when it comes to college football, from a fan perspective, for you, what's the ideal kickoff time?
Ideal, Luke? I would have to say, quite honestly, it would probably be a 7:30 kickoff, just so you have the entire day. You have your morning to be able to prep, and then you get out to the tailgates. You can spend anywhere from 3 to 6 hours, you know, having a good time, and then you go into the game. But I also don't mind a 3:30 kickoff. Now, Luke, I did tell you that when I was at Ole Miss, we had a lot of noon kickoffs, but it was Central Time, so we were having 11 a.m. kickoffs, and so I absolutely despise the noon kickoff. Absolutely despise it, because we would have to get up. I mean, for Ole Miss tailgates, you have to get up at 6:30, get dressed, get ready, and you're down at the Grove by 7:30, Luke. It was unbelievable.
You'd never go to bed.
No.
You would just go right to the tailgate.
Exactly. Majority of the time, yes. You just go right to the tailgate, yeah.
Yeah. The noon kickoffs are tough. Now, I like the Citadel. They do, and obviously I'm not tailgating, I'm working, but they do a lot of 2 o'clock kickoffs, which I like. It's kind of that happy medium. It's not too early because I get to the stadium. I try to get there about 4 hours early and for all my prep and everything. So it's not too early. A noon kickoff, right? I'm trying to get to the stadium at 8 a.m. I'm not a morning person. That's a little too early. I could do a nice 2 p.m. kick. Because it's the best of both worlds. Not too early, but then I get home in enough time to watch the night games, which are usually the top games of the day. So that's similar, I guess, closest to like a standard 3:30. I like a 3:30 then if you're talking SEC or you're talking Power 5 because it's that combination. It's not too early, but you could still get out in time to watch the night games or to have your Saturday night if you want to go do something or, you know, the wife wants you to make up for a day at the football stadium. Not bad. So at 3:30 probably. 7 o'clock, I don't like – we're going to do it today with Citadel Baseball. I don't like waiting around all day. You know, Monday night football or Sunday night football when my team's playing, it's anxiety-ridden waiting all day for the kickoff. I like to kind of rip the Band-Aid off, get it done during the day. I'll wait till 2 or 3:30. 7 o'clock's a little too long.
That's why Detroit Lions fans should be so happy because all their kickoffs are at 1 o'clock.
It's true. Right? You get it done with. You don't have to wait around all week. Watch out for those Detroit Lions this year. By the way, Top Gun. I am seeing so much about this new Top Gun movie. Everybody's talking about it. It's got a 99 on Rotten Tomatoes. there's that story about Tom Cruise getting a 5-minute standing ovation when they premiered the film at the film festival. Friend of the show, Brad Crawford, was tweeting this morning about how it's like the best. Everybody is loving it. It's the best movie since before the pandemic. Everybody, it's almost like a cult following right now in this new Top Gun. A bunch of Scientologists are really excited about this new movie with Tom Cruise. So, Trent, my question I have to ask, are you interested in the new Top Gun?
You know, Luke, I refreshed my memory a couple weeks ago and watched the original Top Gun, and I have to say, I mean, it's a good movie. There's no doubt about it. It's one of the better movies we've had in quite some time. But no, I'm not too pumped up about this. You know, once it hits the streaming services, I definitely will watch it. But this one, I'm not going to see it in theaters. And no, I'm not too hyped about it, even though all the reviews and everything we're hearing, this is the best movie, you know, since Goodfellas, it feels like, Luke, with the way it's being rated. It's unbelievable.
It is. I haven't heard a bad word yet. No. Everybody is talking it up. And even people that I wouldn't expect to be Top Gun fans. The tweet, I brought it up. Brad said this morning, is there anyone who didn't like Top Gun Maverick? This is probably the most critically acclaimed release since pre-COVID. Love to see it. Yeah, it's crazy. So you said you're not the biggest fan of the original Top Gun?
No, I mean, it's a good movie, but, like, it didn't grab me the way it grabs, you know, a lot of other fans. I thought it was good, maybe because I'm not the biggest Tom Cruise guy in the world.
Wow.
That might be, you know, a part of it. I do respect his work. Mission Impossible is great. He does all of his own stunts. But there's just been, I don't know, this is hyped up so much that I feel like if I went and saw it in theaters or something, I'd be disappointed if I find anything wrong with the movie, because it's apparently a picture-perfect movie.
Yeah, that's what they say. So you're not into a 60-year-old Tom Cruise in the new Top Gun going out there doing stunts?
No, you know, I watched the trailer, and apparently everybody got flight training and all that. They went through a rigor. I thought it was a little much, Luke. I thought it was a little much for a movie where you could definitely CGI it, and it would look the exact same than actually flying the plane. So, yeah, you know, I think Tom Cruise does a little much every time he does a movie. A little much.
I saw a headline. I don't know if it was like The Onion or something. But Tom Cruise wanted to actually fly, like, the real plane for the movie?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a legitimate headline or not, but that's absurd.
No, I think he did at some points in the movie. Like, there, I watched this, like, 5-minute little Twitter video, and it was basically Tom Cruise and everybody getting flight training. And, yeah, he was flying, like, one of the main planes during one of the scenes, if I'm not mistaken.
Jeez. All right, I'll give him credit. You know, he does his own stunts. He's flying planes now in movies, which seems completely unnecessary. I'll give him props for that. I used to love Tom Cruise was one of my favorite. He was my favorite actor.
Whoa.
And then now he's doing Mission Impossible, you know, 8 at this point. And you got all the other stuff, his own personal life, which he's just a little bit off his rocker. But I always thought he was a great actor. But now you're giving me all these Mission Impossibles and you're bringing back Top Gun. And I haven't been into a movie of Tom Cruise in too long. But the original Top Cruise, the original Top Gun, I'm also not the biggest fan of. And it's a movie I should love because I love Val Kilmer, and I used to really like Tom Cruise. And it's so 80s, which is right up my alley. But there's just something about it. I'm not the biggest fan of the original Top Gun either. And I have no interest to see the new one. And quite frankly, all of the praise it's getting is just turning me away. It's making me even less interested in ever seeing this movie.
No.
If you overhype something, the expectations become too high that it's going to let you down. When it comes out on streaming, maybe I'll watch it one night for free. But I'm not going to go see it in theaters, and I'm pretty tired of hearing everybody rave about the new Top Gun with 60-year-old Tom Cruise doing his own stunts and a sequel to a movie that came out over 30 years ago.
That's my biggest problem with it, Luke, is that it took so long to get the next movie. Like, the new Avatar that's coming out, I'm past my Avatar phase. I don't really need it. And I watched the trailer, by the way. It looks absolutely terrible. But the Avatar was awesome at the start, but now it took so long to get it back. It's like, what are we doing here? Top Gun took 30 years. I'm past my Top Gun point.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that may be part of the appeal for some people who really love the movie. The longer you've gone, right, the more it's been built up. But we talked about this way back when Coming to America 2 came out 35 years later, and that movie was terrible. And it usually is. I don't have the list in front of me, but we ran through it at the time. Usually when you do a sequel or you do another film 30 years later, it's usually awful because it's obviously just some sort of money grab or you're trying to go back to the well all those years later. You miss the window to try to do another, in this case, Top Gun. And that's the case. Now, Val Kilmer, I guess, is in the new movie. Val had, like, throat cancer. He can't really talk anymore, so I'm curious to see what his role is in the film. And the original Top Gun's a classic, and it gives you so many great lines. I was just never really into it. Now, with that said, here's a little bit of a sports spin on it. I'm not going to give you an article or a top 10 list of an article I saw comparing Top Gun characters to athletes. We won't go that far. But maybe I'm reaching. If I could try to connect Top Gun to the Warriors last night and what they've accomplished, you know, I think what's part of what's impressive about Golden State, or part of the appeal about Golden State, is that it seemed like they disappeared. It seemed like they were dead. I know Draymond Green put out one of his podcasts, was saying the same thing last night after they won, right? Everybody was writing them off. The dynasty's dead, yada, yada, yada. Here they are back in the championship. It seemed like it was done with. And then they come back, and here they are, after a couple of tough years, back in the finals. And I think back to, it's similar to kind of the Patriots, to do another Patriots comparison, in that New England went through like multiple versions within the same dynasty, where they won those three Super Bowls early on, and then they went through a decade without winning. And they had Randy Moss come in, and you know Tom Brady was throwing it all over the place and setting records, and they became a more offensive team. And then they had their second half of the dynasty where they started to actually win Super Bowls again in the past decade, getting up to the six. And it seemed like for a period, we didn't think the Patriots dynasty was dead, but it was like a roller coaster. They had their up, then they had their down, and we thought, okay, other teams are winning. The Patriots were still getting to the Super Bowls, losing to the Giants. They were still one of the best teams in the league. But at the time, right, there was talk like, oh, maybe their Super Bowl winning days are done. Maybe it was just those three. They'll keep getting back there, or they'll be one of the best teams, but they're not going to win as often as they were. And then Brady comes back and wins three more. And it's almost like Tiger Woods as well. A couple years removed, Tiger comes back, wins the Masters a couple years ago. Everybody's crying on that Sunday. They love it. Right, the idea that something goes away for a little while, maybe makes you appreciate it a little bit more. Then it comes back, and it has another run. And the Warriors didn't go away too long, certainly not as long as Top Gun. Right, but you have the original Top Gun, then you go 36 years, now you bring it back, and everyone's going, they're all excited about the sequel. They've been waiting for it. They thought, we're never going to get another Top Gun. And for those big Top Gun fans of the 80s, now you get a sequel to the movie all these years later that you can't wait to go see in the theaters. And it's kind of like the song Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen, although the version by the band, much better. But the lyrics in the song, when he says, everything dies, maybe that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies some days come back. And that's kind of the case here. Not only has Top Gun come back, but like the Golden State Warriors currently in the NBA as well have come back to the top of the sport and will be favored to win the NBA Finals. It's like vinyl records, or most things really in society. It's cool for a while, then it disappears, and you think it's done with. And maybe you got rid of your vinyl record collection. You threw out the bell bottoms and the tie-dye t-shirts and whatever else has come back ever since. And now it's like cool, and vinyls are more expensive than any other form of physical music that you can purchase. And vinyls have made a return. Top Gun has made a return. The Warriors made a return. Now, that was a much shorter disappearing act for the Warriors. It was only about 2 years, right? But everybody kind of, for a period there, wrote them off. Klay was hurt. Steph Curry was hurt. Draymond was hurt. They were all hurt. They weren't very good 2 years ago. And now they're back, competing in the NBA Finals. You could go back to the Chicago Bulls when Jordan went to go play baseball, and you thought, like, that was a great run. Now it's done with. And he left for 2 years, and the Rockets won. And then they came back, and they won again. And we always appreciate that. We appreciate a good comeback story. And maybe that's what Top Gun is. 36 years later, it's a great comeback story, putting out a sequel with Cruise and Kilmer and whoever else they got in this movie. I think Meg Ryan returns. But too much publicity. Whenever something is hyped up too much, that immediately turns me off. When you tell me about this great band, and everybody's talking about it, and everybody loves this band, or whatever it is, movie, TV show, anything, maybe it's why I didn't like True Detective Season 1 as much as most people, because I've been hearing for a decade how it's the greatest season of TV ever. Right? Anytime everybody's on the same page, hyping up the same thing, I guess I'm just a contrarian by nature, but it immediately turns me away. And when I see everyone talking about the new Top Gun, and it's got a 99 on Rotten Tomatoes, and how pathetic are you to go to a movie and give Tom Cruise a standing ovation for 5 minutes? I don't care what the movie is. Unless it is leading to world peace, a five-minute standing ovation for a new Top Gun 36 years later, get lost. I am not seeing this movie, and I'm tired of hearing about it. Actually, I will probably see the movie once it comes out for free on streaming one night, months from now. When we come back, how sustainable is name, image, and likeness? Nick Saban pondered that. Lane Kiffin said it's not a concern. Is name, image, and likeness something that needs to be adjusted? Is it something that eventually is going to go away? Is it going to lead to the death of college football? How sustainable is name, image, and likeness? We'll tackle it next. It's the Mario Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, how sustainable is name, image, and likeness? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We're at the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament, which is continuing today. The Citadel will play tonight. They play the winner of the game actually currently going on at Fluor Field, which is Samford and Mercer, and that game's tied at one in the second inning. Mercer's the 2 seed. Samford's the 3 seed. The Citadel, the 8 seed, still hanging around. They'll take on the winner tonight with their season on the line. And whenever that game gets underway, it's scheduled for 7:30. We'll see if that's the case once we get there. But whenever that game gets started, we'll have it for you on our sister station as the Bulldogs try to keep their season alive. Before we get to name, image, and likeness, we were talking about movies last segment with Top Gun. And unfortunately, yesterday, discussing the sad news of the passing of Ray Liotta at age 67. A friend of mine has a stepfather who used to kind of work in the entertainment world, I guess. And he shared a story of when he was getting started in the showbiz world. And he was paired with Ray Liotta at the time. This was going way back. And it was this guy's job to escort Ray Liotta at the time, who was a star on Another World, the soap opera. And they had to go to, oddly enough, Columbia, South Carolina, for a promotional appearance at a local mall for Ray Liotta. And as this guy says, he was very nervous, totally clueless. But Ray had an offbeat Jersey sensibility that put me right at ease. On the flight to South Carolina, we sat next to legendary basketball coach Frank McGuire. And the next thing you know, we're drinking 30-year-old scotch at the bar in his home. Later that night, Ray dragged me to a party where he enticed me to smoke some wacky weed. I still don't know how I got back to the hotel, but I do remember walking the next morning in a daze, pulled myself together in time for the mall appearance. One problem, though, I couldn't find Ray. The rest of the story is for another day. But suffice it to say, it all worked out and I wasn't fired. Anyways, just found that interesting. And the connection to South Carolina. Had to go on an appearance to a mall in Columbia, South Carolina, of all places, for the old Another World, the soap opera that Ray was on way back when. And they meet Frank McGuire on the plane, and they're drinking scotch in his home, and so on and so forth. Ray Liotta, unfortunately, passed away at 67 yesterday. Now, when it comes to name, image, and likeness, this has become a hot topic once again. I don't know if it's ever gone away, and I don't know if it will go away. But, of course, with Nick Saban's comments. And part of Saban's comments were a concern about how sustainable this model is. Things may have to change, or what does this mean for the future of college football, or we just can't keep going down this path. Now, we hear often about things that aren't quite sustainable that continue to be. In fact, I saw a great Twitter thread from Freezing Cold Takes on Twitter. And this is maybe one of the better examples of these quote-unquote freezing cold takes, where there was a thread with a bunch of examples of things that were originally seen as just like fads, right? Things that wouldn't hang around. Things that were just, it was a craze, it was going to disappear. Such as in 1986, restaurant home delivery, right? To get food delivered to the home was seen as something that wouldn't last. In fact, it was Stuart DeGuise, however he says his last name, from South Carolina, who owned 370 Hardee's, and said, "The novelty of this combination will wear off of the home delivery market, and it may not continue with the same strength," is what he said at the time in 1986. In 1928, movies that featured talking in them were seen as some sort of fad that wouldn't last. In 1995, Newsweek wrote an article about how the internet wasn't going to last. In 1964, there was an article written about the Beatles and how they weren't going to last. It was just a fad. The Beatles are not here to stay. In 1953, somebody wrote an article about bathtubs not hanging around. In 2009, plenty of tweets about Twitter, oddly enough, right? Tweets on Twitter about Twitter not hanging around, and yet here we are all these years later. The iPhone as well, in 2008, was called just a fad. 1903, automobiles were considered only a novelty. 1977, video games. And lastly, electricity at one point was looked at as nothing more than just some sort of phase. Actually, there's a few more here. TVs in 1943, Bluetooth streaming in 2010, bathing in 1923, and lastly, cheeseburgers in 1938. An article was written about, in fact, the New York Times in 1938. Wrote about how cheeseburgers were just a weird new fad. They're not going to last. This can't be sustained. People are not going to want to eat cheeseburgers. The point is, we always look at things that are new, that are different, that maybe we don't like at first. Maybe are seen as weird. You don't really comprehend or understand at first. And you think, oh, no way is that going to last or stick around, or that's not sustainable. We can't keep doing it like this. We can't continue to deliver food to people's homes. That's not going to work out. And yet all those things that I just ran off and mentioned obviously are still here, play big roles, and have only increased. And Lane Kiffin has made, he did a sit-down interview with Sports Illustrated, a lot of comments that has made the rounds, but he said as part of that conversation that NIL is sustainable. Despite his complaints or concerns or the things Lane was mentioning or looking out for, how does it work in the locker room? Does it give boosters more power? Are they going to use that power to demand playing time for the recruits they paid or to get coaches fired when they're not playing certain guys because of the money that was paid to these recruits? There is certainly a negative side, an ugly side, a concerning side to name image and likeness, but don't think that this is some sort of phase and it's just going to go away. Or that name image and likeness is going to wreck college football and the sport you love is simply going to go away. I don't know if that's exactly what Nick Saban was saying. He was concerned about the sustainability. And maybe some things do need to change. I have said, right, we could use some guardrails along the way. But there's a lot of concern, a lot of dislike for name, image, and likeness, what it may bring, what the future may hold. And Lane Kiffin, talking to Sports Illustrated, said, no, it is sustainable. It's part of the game now. We're becoming a professional sport. And I think back to a lot of other things that when they first came about, we thought at the time, like, this is nothing more than some sort of phase. Not going to last, or it has to change, or we can't keep operating like this, and yet here we are. Right? Debt in this country. We're up to trillions of dollars. It just keeps, this is unsustainable, yet we keep adding on, and for the most part, all right, it's okay. We'll continue to add on to that as well. Certain things are seen as being unsustainable, and yet usually they last for quite some time. I don't think name, image, likeness is going anywhere. I do think that certainly we could use some guardrails to try to improve the situation. But I'll also say this, a positive spin on name, image, and likeness. You know, a lot of times we look at football, or others will look at football, as an avenue, as a way out, or any sport for that matter. An opportunity for a better life, a way out from wherever it is that you grew up in. And usually that way out or that opportunity is to get to the NFL eventually. Being a great athlete could get you a scholarship, it could get you a free education, and that could certainly help. But in terms of the serious payday, that occurs when you go to the NFL. But now, if college football is providing a lot of money for the athletes, now suddenly all you have to do is get to the college level. Because for all the talent that we watch play college football, the amount of that talent that actually makes it to the NFL is so minor. And if that's seen as the only option of for some of these athletes, you know, really bettering themselves, their lives, their family, helping out the family, getting out of the town in which they grew up. Well, now maybe college can offer that same solution, that just simply by getting to college, you can accomplish the same thing. And so when it becomes more realistic or you just have more opportunities because there's a lot more college football players than NFL football players, right, maybe it increases the number of guys actually playing football. Because for a number of years, we've been concerned about the youth playing football due to things like CTE, and the dangers of the game, and parents not wanting their kids to play. But if now, just by simply getting to the college level, you can make some good money that could change some things for your family or for yourself or for your life, right? That's even more motivation to pick up the sport, play the sport, just try to get to college. Every athlete growing up, you all have dreams. I had dreams at one time, right, of being a professional athlete, but the chances of actually becoming one are so incredibly slim, of being a professional athlete. But as Lane Kiffin said, college football is now becoming like a professional sport. Now you don't have to make it to the NFL to theoretically become a quote-unquote professional athlete. You just have to get to college. And while that's not easy either, right, a lot of people think it's very easy to play sports in college. I saw it with my family members. It is very challenging just to go try to play in college. There's a lot more high school athletes than there are college. There's a lot more college athletes than there are professional. Every step you go, it becomes a lot harder to take that step. But if you can start making some money at the college level instead of waiting until you hopefully get to the NFL, right, that gives you more reason to play the sport of football, to give it your all, to try to go be a college football player and start getting paid to help out the family or help yourself out or try to better your life. And that could be actually a positive to the whole name, image, and likeness. There may be a lot of negatives, but there are some positives. And it's also something that I don't think is going anywhere either. Maybe we need to adjust the way it's set up, but name, image, likeness, it is sustainable. In fact, the last thing I'll say on all this is think about this. The boosters have been providing money for a number of years. They've just done it in a different way. Boosters have been willing to pay coaches. The Gamecocks just did this. To pay coaches to not coach. They've been willing to give their money to have a coach leave, like a Will Muschamp. Boosters have been willing to drum up $15 million to send Will Muschamp packing and to pay him to go coach somewhere, just to pay him to not coach your team. So if they've been willing to come up with this type of money just to fire coaches, I imagine they'd be willing to come up with that type of money to get players to actually come play for you and help benefit your team instead of paying coaches just to simply go away. You could spend some of that money on players to, instead of going away, come to your program and play for your team. We may not like it. I don't think name, image, likeness is going anywhere. Therefore, right, certain things should be done to try to improve it. But don't think it's going to be eliminated or ruin college football or that 10 years from now, right, things are going to be crazy different and it's going to be it's just a phase. It is sustainable. And I think now that the train has left the station, it's not coming back. This is the new way of college football. And for these coaches, you have to find a way to deal with it, to work with it, because this is the new sport. When we come back, we'll get to Trent's takes. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Now I stand here helplessly, hoping you'll get into me. I am so into you, I can't think of nothing else. I am so into you, I can't think of nothing else.
It's the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get back to the Warriors winning last night to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals once again. Plus, we'll look ahead towards the NBA Finals as well, which won't begin until next Thursday. So we'll see what happens tonight with the Celtics Heat, but they may have a few days without the NBA playoffs. With all these blowouts, maybe that's a welcome break. Anyways, we'll get into that coming up, but we do it around this time each and every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's
fan.
Right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The Radio Cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, I was scrolling the Twitter sphere last night and saw a very disturbing video. Now, I will say right up front, I'm not a cruise guy, Luke, all right? I don't like the idea of being trapped in the middle of the water with a bunch of other people on a floating vessel. That's not my thing. I don't enjoy it now. If you talk about these, like, river cruises and stuff, I know that feels like for people, you know, 60-plus. I would enjoy one of those. Just going through, you know, the Mediterranean, whatever. If it's a nice, small ship, I'm cool with it. But I don't know if you saw this video, Luke. A Carnival cruise ship off of Turks and Caicos, which I would go love to visit, no doubt about it, just not on a cruise, caught on fire, Luke. Caught on fire at their port, and now there are a bunch of people on a Carnival cruise ship. I believe 400-plus people are stuck in Turks and Caicos. My number one reasoning for not wanting to go on a cruise, this could have been Titanic 2.0, Luke. It really could have. The entire, you know, back wing of the Carnival ship just caught on fire, and I loved it. I saw the video of it. They were trying to get hoses to, you know, get some water on it. The hoses couldn't reach how high it was, so the fire was going for hours. Luke, unbelievable. I'm not a cruise guy. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I did see that video. I didn't know the full details. I don't know if it was an empty ship or what. Fortunately, they weren't, like, out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
I've been on 3 cruises, and I probably will never go on another one again. 3 is probably more than enough. The cruise is – it's great when you first get on the boat, and, you know, like, they got a casino, and they got the all-you-can-eat buffet 24 hours a day. But all the cruises I've been on, I think, were for a week. By the time you get to, like, day four or five, you can't wait to get off the ship. So cruises aren't bad, but in moderation. You got to go on, like, a four-day cruise. By the end of the week, you cannot wait to get back on land.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, I don't like this, Luke, because, you know, sometimes on these cruises, you're in international waters. So, you know, what rules are we, you know, playing by? I have no idea. What if, you know, I go overboard? Can anybody find me? All that scares me, and that's why I will never go on a cruise. And that video just, you know, icing on the cake for me. You'll never see me on a cruise unless it's, you know, very small, moderate. Just get me on, you know, Bezos's yacht, you know, out there in the Mediterranean. I could do just fine. Luke, last night in the Western Conference Finals, got to give a big credit to the Dallas Mavericks, all right? The best team over the last 10 years in basketball. Beat you in five games. Now, I know it sounds tough, but the way they did it was phenomenal, with guys like Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson stepping up for, you know, to complement their star, Luka Doncic. Who do they go get? I have no idea. I've heard DeAndre Ayton's name being floated around, potentially a trade partner, the Suns and the Mavs, but I wouldn't trade anybody within the conference, especially a guy like DeAndre Ayton. And also, we were kind of talking about this a little bit yesterday. What are the good free agents that are going to be out there for the NBA this year? You're going to have to make a massive trade, or else personally, I don't think the Dallas Mavericks can get anybody, you know, of worth in free agency. Joel Embiid's locked up all the top centers in the league, and that's what Luka needs. He needs the big man to complement his game. Also, Luka's defense needs to improve, but that's a different story. But I don't know who they can go get, Luke, outside of, you know, maybe giving up a bunch of draft picks for a guy like DeAndre Ayton. And even if they did bring in Ayton, how big of an effect would that be on the offense? To me, I don't see DeAndre Ayton affecting the Dallas Mavericks in the way that some of the big pundits, you know, were talking about it this morning.
Yeah, and Ayton, he certainly has his own questions. I do agree with you. Now, I've said this throughout. For whatever reason, Dallas has never been great at bringing in somebody. Yeah. So even if an Ayton's available or whoever else is available in this free agent market, I haven't even looked, which tells you that's not very good. But even if there is somebody out there that would be a good fit for Dallas, I don't know if they're going to choose Dallas. I mean, there's the iconic story of Mark Cuban, like, driving around and harassing who was it? DeAndre Jordan, I believe, at the time.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, guys are not choosing Dallas. Now, maybe because Luke is there, somebody would want to go play with him. But I am curious to see the options for the Mavericks. They may want to be able to add X number of players, or this guy or that guy. Does that guy want to go there? Because the Mavericks have never been a free agent destination. So my whole point being, I'm curious to see if Luka kind of changes that, if he influences some guys to want to come play in Dallas. But, yeah, this may not be the offseason where the Mavericks can make that big move that helps them get over this hump to go try to win a championship.
Yeah, just to get to the Western Conference Finals has to be an accomplishment, because they basically did it with one guy, even though the role players stepped up. And also, Luke, I mean, close out Klay. This guy, every single time there's a closeout game, he always steps up in the big moments. It was flashbacks to 2015. It was unbelievable to watch last night, Klay Thompson. So how can you hate a guy like Klay Thompson? I know a lot of people hate on him, but he's been through more than an athlete should have. Obviously, back-to-back, you know, career, could have been career-ending injuries. To come back and drop 32 in that game was absolutely phenomenal. Luke, on the game tonight, Boston and Miami, game six, my feelings going into it that this series is going to wrap up. Obviously, I'm optimistic about the Miami Heat, but in Boston, game six, we know how these games go. They're an 8.5-point underdog, which baffled me, Luke. Absolutely baffled me when I saw that this morning. But the odds makers are looking at it and saying, basically, Miami doesn't have a shot to win this game, especially with the money line at plus 330. There's no way they would set that and actually think that Miami was going to win this basketball game. I'm a Miami Heat diehard fan for life, but Luke, I think it wraps up tonight, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately for you and your Heat brethren. I took the Warriors last night, alternate spread 9.5, because we have had so many blowouts in this postseason, and I figured elimination game, they'll put the Mavericks away. And it became a little bit closer than I thought it would at the end of the game. But the point being, for tonight, with that big point spread, I guess I can see something similar. The Heat are banged up. They have not played great the last couple of games. And now the Celtics are at home with a chance to close out this series. Don't want it to go to Game 7, have to go back to Miami, can win at home, and punch your ticket to the finals. And this postseason has just been filled with blowouts. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics not only win tonight, but if they do win by 10-plus, because that's just what the NBA playoffs have given us. Whatever team wins, they usually win by double digits.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be a tough one tonight, Luke, but I will be cheering on the boys as they make their final attempt to get to the NBA Finals. Now, Luke, yesterday I asked you which would be a better bet for a division winner, the Eagles or the Bengals in their respective divisions. I will ask you another question, this time about the AFC and the NFC championships. Luke Morrow, which is a better bet for the AFC championship? The Chargers at plus 850 or the Broncos at plus 850? Personally, and this might sound crazy with who the Broncos just added, I'm all in on the Chargers right now. I'd take them plus 850 over the Broncos right now.
I agree with you. Wow. I would take the Chargers. I would take you said the Chargers, right?
Yeah, Chargers.
Yeah, I would take the Chargers, yeah. I think the Chargers have a better roster. I think they have some more proven commodities, and it's Brandon Staley has not proven himself, but I also have questions about how good of a coach Nathaniel Hackett will be, because we haven't seen him do it yet. And when he's been an offensive coordinator, he hasn't necessarily been a great offensive coordinator. And when it comes to the quarterbacks, I'm not going to tell you Justin Herbert's better than Russell Wilson, at least not yet. He very well could end up having a better career. But Russell Wilson I have some questions about, too. I keep saying this offseason, you know, in Seattle, all of his offensive coordinators got fired. Most great quarterbacks, their coordinators go on to bigger jobs. That wasn't the case with Russ. So I have some questions with Russell Wilson trying to come in and be the savior for Denver, and if that will actually work. When he won a Super Bowl, you know, it's, of course, more about the defense, where yeah. I think Justin Herbert has that higher ceiling that he can carry a team to the playoffs, or in this case, a conference championship or a Super Bowl, maybe more than Russ. So long answer short, I agree with you with the Chargers. I think they just have a better roster first and foremost, and I think I may trust the quarterback this year more.
Yeah, it came down to the defense for me here, Luke. Now that you have Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa coming off the edges, Kyle Van Noy, who's a great linebacker at the middle linebacker position. You got J.C. Jackson at corner paired with Asante Samuel and Derwin James, and a great offense. So, yeah, I would take the Chargers there as well. Now, Luke, for the NFC Championship, which is a better bet, do you think, at this time right now, the 49ers at plus 750 or the Cowboys at plus 850? This might shock some people, but who knows who's playing quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, and I don't trust Trey Lance as of right now, so I would pick the Dallas Cowboys right here.
Interesting. I'm on the same page with you with the Niners. If you tell me Trey Lance is the starter,
yeah,
I don't trust him. I don't think they get there. You tell me Jimmy Garoppolo's the starter, I say no doubt I'm taking the Niners over Dallas. But if it's Trey Lance, oof, because I don't trust the Cowboys either. I guess if, and we obviously don't have this information, that's why it's an interesting question. But if it's Trey Lance, I'll go Cowboys. I'm with you there. If it's Jimmy Garoppolo, I'll go Niners. I don't trust Trey. We got the excuse the other day that, oh, he had a finger issue last year. That was the problem. I don't buy it. So, yeah, I guess it just comes down to the quarterback for the Niners. With Jimmy Garoppolo, I would trust them more, but otherwise I'll go Dallas.
Yeah, and we saw the 49ers without Jimmy Garoppolo struggle on the offensive side. He just brings that offense together. Yeah, if it's Trey Lance, I don't think the Cowboys will obviously win the NFC. There's no way that they do, quite honestly. But if I was picking between the two, it'd have to be the Cowboys. Last thing here, Luke, I don't know if you saw the viral video of Justin Ross's one-handed catch in a practice with the Kansas City Chiefs. Awesome for him that he's getting an opportunity with the Chiefs. And not only did Travis Kelce tweet about Justin Ross, but Patrick Mahomes has been tweeting a lot about Justin Ross. And he said, in quote, people don't realize how good this guy can actually be. So what a great opportunity for, you know, Clemson guy who, wait, you know, and I'm a big receiver nerd. His freshman year at Clemson, no doubt if he would have stayed healthy, he would have been a top 10 pick, potentially top 5 pick. And now to see him, you know, undrafted, gets a chance with the Chiefs, I think it's going to do wonders for his career.
Yeah, I think so. He was one of my top five right after the draft. We had the top five best fits, and I said him going to Kansas City. If Ross was as an undrafted free agent, the great thing is you could pick where you go. And I don't know if there's a better spot to pick than going to Kansas City. And it would be very much Mahomes and Reed and their style that if they're able to turn Ross into the great wide receiver we thought he was going to be at this level following his freshman year. So I did see the catch. I saw the praise. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a sneaky good year or just a good year, couple of years here in the future for Kansas City. That could be a good match there, assuming he stays healthy. So that could be a great grab for them. Hey, by the way, when it comes to the we're both on the Chargers, at least over the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned the Chiefs. Who do you think wins the division? Is it still the Chiefs' division to win?
I think so, Luke. It's got to be, right? It's tough to bet against a team with a guy like Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. But for the AFC, I mean, I would take the Bills right now, probably over everybody. But again, I mean, they're the Super Bowl favorite. They're the favorite to win that conference. But it's just so tough to bet against the Chiefs, you know, night in and night out, because we have no idea what can happen to them on a week-to-week basis.
And in sticking in the AFC West, the Raiders, who would you put in last place?
Raiders, no doubt about it. Yeah, I'm not a big Derek Carr guy. I love Devontae Adams, don't get me wrong, but he did leave Green Bay. He's not going to have the same success as he did in Green Bay. Hate to break it to you. It's just about the quarterbacks, pal. But, no, the Raiders improved, obviously, bringing Chandler Jones in and having Devontae Adams, but I don't see them competing with this murderer's row division that they're in.
NFC Championship. We said Cowboys and 49ers. You taking the Packers over those two?
Yeah, I'll take the Packers over those two, but I won't take the Packers over the Rams or the Bucks. I'll tell you that right now. Won't take them over them. But, yeah, the Cowboys, are you kidding me? Bug on the windshield. What are we doing?
That's fair. Hey, when we come back, we'll wrap up hour two. Do we believe the Tom Brady hole-in-one? Plus, at some point, we have to talk about this milk-drinking or milk-chugging tradition at the Indy 500, which is going on again this weekend. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio, wrapping up hour two. Maybe you saw this video online from the other day. It's been all the rage, the debate about Tom Brady and his latest golf shot, which is being phrased as a hole-in-one, but there's a video. He posted a video on Twitter, and he said, "This is why you film every shot on the course." And it's almost supposed to be played up as if it's some sort of hole-in-one, but you see as the drone, it's filmed with the drone, and it's a, you know, it's a pretty cool video. But you see as the drone gets out towards the green that they're standing in the middle of the fairway. And yet when Brady takes the shot, they put down like tee markers where he was standing to almost make it look like it was from the tee box, and it is a legitimate hole-in-one when really he's taking the shot. He's like chipping onto the green, and it happens to go in. And there's just something, it's got the drone, it's being filmed, they're celebrating. Something obviously just seems off about it. And it's turned into a whole debate online about Tom Brady. If he actually did make that shot on the first try, if it's CGI, if it's edited, if it's some sort of video just to promote the drone technology, whatever it may be, or it's a sponsorship. And it further is, you know, Tom Brady, since going to Tampa, has been very active on social media. And he's shown his personality, and he's joking around, and he's having fun. And maybe this is another example of something along those lines. But I know some people either love it, or some people are really annoyed by kind of the new, almost obnoxious Tom Brady with all these social media posts and continually putting himself out there in the spotlight, like looking for attention almost. Trent, did you see the Tom Brady video?
I did see the Tom Brady video, and Luke, and I'll already answer your question. It was fake as day. Fake as day. There's no chance. I've never heard a golf ball actually make a clinking noise when it went into the hole, so that was my indication right there, Luke. But, yeah, this is troll Tom Brady at its finest. We know. We know.
That is a good point about the noise. Yeah, I do. I also think it's fake as well. But it's a big debate about Tom Brady. And if it is fake, as we assume, the question kind of becomes like, almost what's the point? Maybe it's to promote some sort of company or sponsorship or a drone that they use to film the whole thing. But it's just another one of, I appreciate the new Tom Brady and the personality and, you know, different Brady than how he was in New England. But some of this stuff, a little much. I don't know if we need a fake video of a quasi hole-in-one from the middle of the fairway with Brady celebrating with his buddies on the course.
He's promoting the match. He's promoting the match.
That's true. That's a good point. We get all these silly videos about the match and teasing the other quarterbacks about losing their wide receivers. Hey, hour three coming up next. We'll circle back to the Warriors in the NBA Finals next.